हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 35. Verses 17 to 61. Hiranyakashipu satisfies his grieving relatives. In verses 17 to 61, Narad Muni describes how Hiranyakashipu pacified his relatives, quoting from the Shastras about the truth of life. Sri Narad Muni continued, after performing the ritualistic observances for the death of his brother, Hiranyakashipu, being extremely unhappy, tried to pacify his nephews. O King, Hiranyakashipu was extremely angry, but since he was a great politician, he knew how to act according to the time and situation. Right. So, the point is there's a science to how you behave, how you deal in a situation, right? Because as we've discussed, is that you have what is the knowledge of the situation, right? Means who you are, the situation you're in, the ingredients within the situation, all these things. So that aspect then has to be applied. Now, why you apply it, that will depend on your consciousness. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if you're following the rules of Dharma, continuing this process, according to Shastra, you follow this, and so then it's according to your Dharma, then you'll do it because it's supposed to be done. Or you'll do it because it elevates you from this world, right? By doing the proper thing in the proper way, without an attention, without attachment, you'll get freed from material entanglement. Right? Or you do it to please Krishna. But here you see, he says he's a great politician. So he's following the time, place, and circumstance because of the benefit he'll get politically. Right? So political means artha. Much of the time we think it's a different thing. Oh, political means it's kshatriyas, economics means it's vaishyas, like that. But the idea is that if it's political without being based on dharma, that is your duty, then it's also economics. What's the whole point of politics? Is to gain profit. Does this make sense? So, that's the whole point, this whole political correctness, all these different things, all these various kinds of corporate so-called social models. They're all for economics. They're only for gain. So they're all politics. Yes.
Can we say that he's using the law of karma for pranamaya? He's not on that level.
Yes. Yes, that's the whole point. Artha is functioning because of following the rules of dharma. But it's not for dharma's sake. It's for artha's sake. You understand?
He himself isn't there.
Yes. And niti means you're following the rules of dharma just in the particular time, place and circumstance to deal with the particular mechanics of the situation you're in to make profit. So in other words, religion makes profit, right? From dharma comes artha. But it's a side product. But when you're performing dharma just for artha, it's called artha. And when you're using the elements of dharma, but you're not necessarily It's not about limiting yourself to specific activities. It's about performing the activity properly to get the profit. That's called niti. Does that make sense? Define the niti. Means you're following the mechanics of the laws of nature to gain profit. But it's not that you're distinguishing on which laws am I supposed to be following according to Dharma and which I'm not. Does that make sense? So in Artha, you could be following Dharma, but only for Artha. Or you could be making up your own, you know, Dharma for Artha. Does that make sense? Like that. So Dharma is the bigger picture, because here's the laws of nature, and which ones are you supposed to be performing, and why are you doing it? Because it's your duty. So it's a mode of goodness. Artha means you're doing the same thing, but for the profit, so it's passion. Does that make sense? And then niti means you're not worried whether this is something I'm supposed to be doing, but you're following correctly the mechanics of the laws. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's niti. Niti means on the spot exactly what's happening right now, how to make it work. So whether you're supposed to do it, someone else is supposed to do it. So all three are used. So if they're all three based on the principle of Dharma, it's considered proper. You understand? And so you'll say he's a religious person. You'll have that consciousness. But if it's on the next, on Artha, then it'll be that. And the lower end of Artha is just your practical. You're just being practical. You know, so when someone says, oh, we're just being practical, that's niti. Okay? And so you see, along with that comes a so-called sense of morality. Oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. But why? When do they bring it up? If they've done something wrong and nobody knows, they don't bring it up. If one of their good friends and all that, you know, who's in good standing, does something wrong, oh, you know, you had a bad day, things happen, and this and that. But if someone who is not, they're not favorable towards, oh, this is the key to get them out of their position. Yeah, you understand? So it's not based on Dharma. They're talking moral principles, but it's not about morality, it's about economics. Does that make sense? So that's the interesting thing, is you'll find the ones that are so much just practical, we don't have to get stuck on all these rules and this and that, are the most sticky about morality when it's to their advantage. So that's where you see they go together. So when they talk like this, you think, oh, they're a very moral upstanding person. No, they're just very attached to making profit, that's all. Because it's not consistent. Because you'll see is that their morality is never bad for themselves. It's only good for themselves. Well, if you're following Dharma, because you're following the rules, sometimes it might not be ideal for yourself. You know, like Yudhishthir Maharaj accepting the gambling challenge because his elder, Dhritarashtra, then invited him. But technically, if you were looking at Artha or Niti, you wouldn't follow it at all. And actually, technically, according to Dharma, he doesn't have to. But a higher principle is respect of authority, so he took that platform rather than the platform. Because of the other, he doesn't fight, which is going to be good for himself, but it's disrespecting his elder, which is a higher principle. So therefore, following Dharma, he gets himself, sometimes, you know, things don't work out, because unscrupulous people take advantage of it.
Knowing his
commitment to that. You know, so we see it rarely that the others who would take advantage don't and trust him because they know he's always like that. So when it came to like the, what do you call it? That battle at Virat, so the Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana is very confident that they were still during the time of exile. And so now they found out who they are, now they have to go back into exile. Right? But because different people had different opinions on the calculation, they couldn't come up with a solution, so they asked Yudhishthira. And whatever he said, even though it would be bad for he'll accept it because they know he'll always just tell the truth. He'll follow. Right? You know, just like Nectar Devotion says that the demons are confident. They can sleep peacefully at night because they know that Vishnu won't come and bother them unless they've bothered him. Right? So even though they know like that. So that's why here, then when his brother got killed, then he's blaming Vishnu, he's siding with the demigods. What he's not factoring in is he's attacking and fighting with Vishnu, so what do you want? Yeah, so like that. So it wasn't that, it was just he was sitting there, you know, out in the garden with a few friends, you know, just talking, and then, you know, Varaha rolled in and then, you know, killed him. You know, it didn't happen like that. You had something.
So we see that he's trying to motivate his family members.
Yes.
Using these three levels of consciousness, but it's not spiritual at all. Although it sounds like it is.
Yes. Means, in other words, he's speaking spiritual subject matter, but his consciousness is not spiritual. Right? He's telling the spiritual facts. That's why it's in Bhagavatam. Otherwise, it would just say, you know, he pacified his relatives by speaking on the nature, the difference between the soul and matter. It wouldn't get into detail. You know. But, so he's speaking real, but the problem is he's not using it for real purposes. He's only using it so that he's angry, but he doesn't want to be in an environment where everybody's upset. Is that okay? Does that make sense? Yes.
But sometimes we go to class, Bhagavatam class, and we get a feeling that we're not sure what was this class about.
Yes. No, that's there, because, well, I mean, just on a general note, because sometimes the person speaking isn't quite clear on a particular point. They just don't know how to articulate the point. But if it's a matter of, how you say, what's their purpose of saying the different things, then that's another. See, the point is that there's the level of consciousness and there's the technique of that level. But you can use all of them for, you know, just as you can use all five for bhakti, you can use all five for any of the others. You know, it's just like Daksha before, his, what are Guhyahamsa prayers? Is that what they were called? So, Hamsaguya prayers, okay. Hamsaguya prayers. They were spoken and they're very good. They're all facts about the Lord and His position and our relationship with Him and everything like that. But it was Bhakti Mr. Karma. He was using bhakti to gain karma. So he's a person who's religious and he wants the material benefits. So then he's using these higher levels for that. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is you can always get that. You know, someone is interested in all the elements of the heavenly planets for sense enjoyment. Right? So he's following Dharma so that he'll get Kama. Does that make sense? That's why all these things become so confusing. That's why the, how you say, on one level, emotionally, the melodramatic is always more satisfying because the bad guy is always bad. The good guy is always good. You know, so it makes things very, very clear. It makes it very easy. The difficulty comes up is that sometimes bad people act as good and good people act as bad. You know, so that's where it becomes confusing. So it's how can this happen? It says it shouldn't be like that because it's mixed. That's the whole thing. So that's why it's then important to understand intent. Because you understand the mechanics, but depending upon the intent, like Daksha is doing all these different yajnas and karmas, and we're looking at him as a materialist. Right? Pious, one of the best, you could probably say the most pious materialist in the universe. Right? But at the same time, the same processes are being followed by Priyavrata, Rishabdev, you know, Bharatmars, these great personalities, without any tinge of karma. It's all bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's why the point of intent has to be able to be understood. Because otherwise we take it that just the form itself makes the thing. You know what I'm saying? Like that. We're wearing dhotis and saris, therefore it's spiritual. Right? Technically, you look at it as that why we're considering it is because of the spiritual platform. So that's why we're wearing it. But it's not that the dhoti or sari is something specifically spiritual. You know, despite the point that the shop is called the Sari Mandir, or, you know, like this. Yeah. The Vaikuntha Bandar, yes, yes. So this is the meaning of all these things. You know, it's just like in Loy Bazaar. You know, now it's probably common, but it was very interesting before when it was just the devotees are there. Loy Bazaar was just Loy Bazaar. But then when they figured out that the, you know, Western devotees seem to have some economic, how you say, surplus, yes, okay, some economic surplus, then they started putting up pictures of Prabhupada in the shops, you know, in a very obvious play, you know? Not that they didn't have a feeling towards it, because the Braj Basis did respect Prabhupada. But, you know, see, they have, you know, there's so many there. But then, you know, they're putting that up, then, you know, I go to that shop because he respects Prabhupada. Well, that.
Preaching,
yes.
Right? Huh. Can we say that what Hiranyakashipu did was actually niti?
Yes, you could say it's niti. But the point is the because the political point is it's the same thing. Politics can, you have dharma and there's politics there, but you're doing what's supposed to be done because that's what you're supposed to do. A king has to act in a political way to accomplish his means to protect his citizens. If he does that, out of the point of trying to perform his duties to protect his citizens, then it's called dharma. The same rules perform just because of the benefits that you'll get and the duties they'll do there. The others you're just doing because they're effective. That's niti. You understand? Because niti is effective. You understand?
Can we call it ignorance?
It has some ignorance in it. So it's like you could say, within following the laws of God, you'd have, goodness of goodness would be dharma, goodness of passion would be artha, and goodness with you know, goodness, passion, and ignorance. You throw in that ignorance and you get niti. You know, so a kind of mu-shart shifting. It's not so much about the goodness, it's just that you're willing to follow the law. It's just like any person who's successful in the world, they're willing to follow the laws of that system. And generally they're the best at it. That's why they're successful. But their purpose in doing that's a whole different thing. Was that? Yeah. That you just go by symptoms. You have to be observant and see. You know, does it match? Does the mood and what they're doing, the goals all match? And if not, you have to analyze. Then there's something mixed there. Yes. You have to speak more loudly. Here's the choice. Very nice, clear hearing and being hot. Or having the fans on where you're not hot, but then you have to speak louder. So in other words, austerity is going to be there. Either way. The question is basically, do we require the mercy of the Lord to be able to follow Dharma properly? Means on the material platform, you have to follow, means follow the laws to be able to follow the laws. Right? You make the effort to follow the laws, and of course, everything you can do is by the Lord's mercy. But within the material sphere, that kind, he'll give easily. So he'll give easily the results of karma or jnana. But bhakti, then that's personally his mercy. That's the difference. The other two, it's from the mercy from the platform of Brahman and Paramatma. You follow the rules, you get the result. Not that he's bound by it, it's his rule that you follow the rule, you get the result. So it's not karma mimamsa, because I did it, I have the right to get it. No, I did it, then it's by the Lord's mercy, I get it, yes. But this is different from that mercy, meaning that by him as a person, he then, therefore, based on your devotional attitude, you get results there. But yes, everything's based on the Lord, but it's a different aspect of his mercy. That's what we were saying before. It's the difference between, sthana and poshana. His maintenance of things, sthana is that the rules are there, you follow the rules, you get good. You don't follow the rules, you get bad. The poshana is nourishment, because it's based on bhakti. So it basically means, is the endeavor made from the platform of the soul, or the endeavor is made from the platform of the conditioned nature? The conditioned nature follows the rules, laws of nature, then the conditioned nature improves and gets better facilities. Right? You follow the laws of God in connection with the soul. Right? But without bhakti, then you get liberated. You follow the laws of nature, you know, connected with the soul to please Krishna, that's bhakti. So in any case, you have to follow the rules, the laws. That's why it says human life begins with dharma, because that's the laws. Because as we see, applying the laws in artha and kama, artha, niti, and kama aren't actually full application of the laws. Because you're following some aspect of the laws, but not following others. Yeah, it's expedient for the purpose. That's the whole thing. Yes.
So, Arjuna, if you use of Vedanta here, in the text of Vedanta, is the most effective means of removing manifestation?
Yes. It can clear anything, because it brings about the personal, brings about the aspect of the soul and not being connected with matter. You know, so it's personal, it has knowledge, and also it's practical. You know, it gets results. So it has all the aspects to it.
Sometimes it appears that this is not well understood.
No, it's not necessarily, because also sometimes when it's presented, it's not understood. So others many times use it like Hiranyakashipu. Family members are upset, they want to speak the philosophy and have them, you know, respond. But the point is, it says he is a great politician. So that means he knows how to use the proper intonation of the voice, the proper words, the proper mood, everything. Proper timing, everything. And therefore he gets the results. While we go in, you know, how you say, like the bull in the china shop kind of, you know, method. And it doesn't always work very well. Yeah, in fact, how you say? Taking all cases all together, then it seems it's between 50 and 70% of the time it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right, you know. Is that okay? Yeah. So that's why it's very important to know these things, because it's thought, if I'm doing the secondary, then it's thought automatically I'm doing the primary. No, if you're doing the primary, then the secondary has meaning. But if you're doing the secondary, it doesn't necessarily mean that the primary has any meaning here. You know, what is your primary? Right? If it's the actual primary, then whatever you do in the secondary will be spiritual. It's just the quality of it. But if you're using the secondary, it can be any of the five levels of consciousness. That's the whole point. Bhakti includes everything else. Everything else doesn't include bhakti. You know, it's the superior. So that's the whole difference. We're used to no secondary me. That is the thing. That's as we described before. Why would we make that mistake? Because in the spiritual world, the primary means Krishna. And so, therefore, they focus on the secondary in ways to please Krishna as the primary. Therefore, all the arts and sciences and all the cultural interactions and all endeavors and knowledge and all that are meant to please Krishna as the primary. Right? Now, if we reflect that to this material world, then the secondary aspects are going to be the same. The difference is the primary is ourselves. Right? So in the spiritual world, because the primary is not about yourself, it's about Krishna, and everybody has the common primary, therefore all discussions, all cooperations, all endeavors are about the primary, so everyone can work together really nicely. Right? But in the material world, since the primary is yourself, and each living entity thinks they're the primary, then you don't have that commonality of discussing about it. Because if you discuss about yourself, unless you're in a very, very powerful, very influential position, or very safe position, you can't get away with talking about yourself without others thinking that it's not proper. You know, that you're self-centered, or you're insensitive, or, you know, whatever, there's a whole list of... Right? But on the spiritual platform, if you're talking about Krishna, no, everybody's going to be on board. So it's automatic social, you know, commonality. Well, on the material platform, then the primary is not common. They can be compatible, like family members. It's like I and mine. So in a family, then each person is I, and everybody else in the family is mine. So because there's a commonality there, maybe... You know, I'm the I, they're the mine, and then in their mind, they're the I, I'm the mine, but at least there's an I and mine kind of commonality there, so you can say it's a group. So then, you will look at the elements that, the secondary that's going to bring about the, how you say, results that are good for I and mine. You know? Does that make sense? As long as it's a common. When it gets down to little detail, like, how you say, that last half a centimeter of water in the bottle in the fridge, you know, then it's a problem, because then the eye has to refill it. But they would rather that the mine does it. So you wait a few more minutes, you know, and, you know, unless you're totally thirsty, that maybe someone else in the family be thirsty, come in and refill it. Somebody does? So on that level, you see there's going to be a little problem because of this point of I. So you see all the focus, therefore, is on the commonness, the discussions, the what's discussed amongst them is always going to be secondary. It has to be. Because who wants to hear about somebody else's I? You know, unless you consider them mine. Right? But even if you don't know them, they can all talk about Krishna and that'll work out fine. Does that make sense? So that's why Krishna consciousness is the universal aspect. It does create the social background. Right? Devotees are together as a community because of Krishna's the center in on the transcendental platform. When it comes to the social, then there'll be differences. But when it comes to the philosophy like this, then it'll be the same. So there is that common point. So therefore you can bring so many people together. Now if you can add in the secondary, then it'll make it even stronger. So on the material platform, because of the I being the primary, then what secondary aspects are to gain it are going to be different, because every individual is different. So that means the secondary processes are going to be different for each individual. Therefore, then there's not the cooperation. That's why Prabhupada says, like taking a handful of rocks and tossing them in a pond. So many circles and all the ripples that go out are going to bump into each other. Well, in the spiritual world, you just take one rock and then you get these nice waves going out all across the whole lake. Does that make sense? So that's why in the material world, it's all about the secondary. But when we hear the pastimes in the spiritual world, most of it's all about the secondary. But because Krishna's the primary, all the secondary matches. But here, then, because the primary is not common, therefore the secondary, unless there's some commonality, therefore, that's why, let's say, in a family or a community or a country or a region, there are certain common points. Right? So therefore, they can relate to each other. But once you leave that area, you don't see it. You know, like you drive around Europe. What do you call them? You know, the window boxes with the petunias growing out of. You only see them in Germany. You know, every German house has them. You know, the countries next to that don't have them. You know, it's not that petunias don't grow there, or that, you know, there aren't windows, or you couldn't put boxes in the windows. You know, but it's you know what I'm saying? So each place has something. And it is what, you know, like in, what is it, Greece, is that one island, everybody's painted everything blue, you know, like that, or, you know, different things. They just have some common, they all do that, but you don't see anybody else painting their places blue or anything, you know, or you, the blue places don't have window boxes, the ones with window boxes aren't blue, you know, like that. You understand? So, therefore, there's some commonality there, but within themselves, there's never. So, if there's something common, let's say like a common enemy, then they'll all group together. But as soon as the common enemy's gone, there's nothing common anymore, then they fight. So that's the difficulty. We make this mistake that the secondary is the substance. But it's not. You know, that means you can say as if it's according to Guru Sadhana Shastra, okay, that has substance as a secondary. But it's actually Krishna's the really real thing. Yeah. That's the whole point. So this is where it comes up, is that because we only think secondary, if it's secondary aspects within recommended activities for spiritual life, we take it that they are spiritual automatically. Well, they're spiritual because of the connection to the primary. So, since it's about the primary, what secondary aspects are recommended? Right? But you have this modern kind of philosophy where I'm the primary. You know? Or at least, you know, the junior primary. Okay, ultimately I'll say, yes, Krishna is the supreme, it's all about Krishna. But the secondary attributes are always about myself. And then I will connect them to Krishna. But Krishna is saying, you're following Dharma and connecting it to Krishna. So Dharma is the secondary. So when we make it about ourselves, then the quality of it is reduced. But if it's based on the Shastras, then at least it's a proper pious. But if it's not based on the Shastras, then it becomes speculative. Or it's partially based, partially not. You know, in other words, you take the Shastras, use them how you like, you know. So then it becomes even less. So the quality of the offering starts going down and down. Is that what I'm saying? But unfortunately, because we're the center, then the secondary makes sense, and we're devotees, so automatically our secondary is spiritual, right? A equals B, B equals C, so A equals C. But they're not catching is that C likes things done in a particular way, so therefore, and we like things done in a particular way. So our A is according to us, not according to C. Right? So, yeah, so the point is this, we're a devotee of Krishna, so B equals C, but B is not identifying as much as in all aspects as a devotee, so therefore A, what we're using, is connected to us, not to C. So in this way, then the syllogism is only one way. It does connect. We're connected to C, we're connected to A, but because it's only a one-way direction, therefore, A doesn't connect to C. So it's logically, you know, it's sophistic. Like that. Whether it's understood or whether it's not, that's another thing. Most don't have the ability to understand it. A few may understand it. And if, you know, what can they do? That's another thing. Then we don't mind. If it's that's their plan, then that's not good. Yes.
I'm just trying to understand what you're saying.
Can you say it louder, please?
I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
Okay.
So
that's better than not trying to understand. You're out on the road. It was really hot in here. You heard the fans, so you came in and sat down.
So I don't see where the problem, like with what you just said. I don't understand the problem. Like,
you don't understand the problem.
Yeah, like.
How do you define the?
So you said that the primary is Krishna, and then we're there as well, and so that's the thing. It's like we're the only one who we're working with. So of course we're gonna be working with ourselves.
Yes, but are you working with yourselves as an instrument or as the doer? See, when you have an action, right? An action means that an action is a verb, right? So that has to connect. The action has to connect two nouns, right? So that means the one performing the action and the one towards which the action is directed, right? So now, do we see ourselves in the position of that doer as the subject, or do we see ourselves in the position of the instrument through which the subject is getting it done? Right? In other words, does the, let's say, the manager think that I'm managing all this, or I'm using the skills that I have in management in Krishna's service, so therefore I'm just a servant? If that's the case, if I'm an instrument, then who's the center? Krishna. But if we're the doer, who's the center? You understand? So therefore, if we're the doer, then it can still work if after gaining the result we give it to Krishna. That's renunciation. But if we don't give it to Krishna, then how does it become spiritual? But if we're the instrument, it's already about Krishna, it's already spiritual, right? Renunciation means my action's not spiritual, but having gained the result, I give it to Krishna, so therefore it becomes spiritual. While being the instrument means it's spiritual from the beginning, because I identify as the servant of Krishna, and so therefore I'm only doing actions to please Krishna. The difference is who are you trying to please, right? So ultimately all devotees are trying to please Krishna, so there's not going to be a problem there. But in the method that they're using to get there, much of the time we see we're trying to please ourselves.
You
do that, but then make it clear that it's there. Don't present yourself as a Paramahamsa and then be acting like a gross neophyte.
Yeah.
That's cheating. That's the whole thing. And then at the same time, attacking the Madhyamas and Uttamas, who then either give the rules or are following the rules.
Yeah.
That's just devious. Right? Someone says, I'm attached to this and that, I have so many desires, therefore for me to be in this kind of environment is comfortable, but you know, as far as my ability and by grace of Guru and Krishna, I'm trying to engage all this in Krishna's service. That's very honest. Who won't respect that? Even if the person has unlimited desires, you have to respect that. But if you try to say, no, this is not practical, all that Vedic stuff, it doesn't work, you know, we're here in a modern environment, therefore we have to use all these modern things because that's the only way that it'll actually work. All the whatever's been come out of the mouth there, none of it has anything to do with reality. All it is saying, I'm from this background, I'm attached to this background, I want to function within this background, but at the same time, you know, seeing the relevance of Krishna conscious philosophy, I accept that philosophy, but on no way, shape, or form do I accept the religious part of it. You know, the Dharma or the rules of it, the culture of it. So I want to follow my own culture, but philosophically be connected to Krishna. And then I'm going to say that what I'm doing connects to Krishna.
They're embarrassed.
Their ego is very big. They don't want anybody to think. So they want to say that my neophyte position is the same as someone else's advanced position. Not that the individual is not advanced philosophically, but when it comes to these particular points, then there's an attachment there that they're trying to cover with philosophy. That is politics. Like Hiranyakashipu is doing. That's politics. So the one who's better at it then becomes, you know, the prominent. Like Hiranyakashipu, he's the head of the persons who are doing this. You know what I'm saying? So that's not honest. Right? The people have attachments, that they have difficulties in a particular area. That's natural. They're conditioned. Even the Madhyama, though he doesn't, he's connecting everything to Krishna and that's steady, has preferences where he'd like to be engaged, but because it's natural to his conditioning. So it's, he'll do things because he likes to do those things. And but he doesn't for Krishna. So they're being done for Krishna, so that's why it's the Madhyama. They're on the platform of sannyas. But Krishna is saying ultimately it's got to not be because of your conditioning. It has to be just because of the relationship between the living entity and Krishna. Then you use what facilities you have. You're in the spiritual world, you have your spiritual body. Use that in Krishna's service. In the material world, you use whatever material body you have. So right now the body has a particular conditioning. You use that. You understand? So it's different. That's why the Uttama is different from the Madhyama. But the Madhyama is different from the neophyte. You understand? And in here, as we discussed before, is you have the five levels of consciousness, and each of them has their methods. You can mix them. You know what I'm saying? So in the same way, as you can have an individual who's advanced on one level, but not on another. You know, it's just like sometimes someone, they're so good at chanting or other things like that, but when it comes to prasad, they're very attached. You know, if things don't work out the way you want, they start freaking out and everyone's going, what's the big deal? Do you understand? So, in other words, in their conditioning, that's the weak part. But let's say in their, so it can't be that, oh, he's attached here, we have to, you know, then, you know, he's not really chanting. No, he is really chanting. So therefore, you take advantage of the association with chanting, not in taking prasad. Do you understand? So that's the whole point, is that there's a weakness, that's not a fault. That's going to be there. Otherwise, then we would, you know, already be back in the spiritual world. Right? So that's not what you look at. You look at what's the good. But it's still a point of natural analyzation of your own development. You see where's the attachments and you see how to make them work nicely. You know, how you can connect them. So that it is, has this connection to Krishna, that's all right. But it should be understood what quality it is you're connecting. That is, how you say, Atma Tattva, you know, or knowledge of the soul. Because the Atma means also, what's the conditioning, the gross conditioning, right? Then the subtle, what's the mind, what's the intelligence, what's the ego, what kind of polluted consciousness therefore is there. All these are Atma. So self-realization means understanding all this. But if you can only understand you're the sole servant of Krishna. Start from there, and as you're able to, you add the others in. But finding there's a weakness in one shouldn't try to cover it with, you know, some kind of spiritual understanding.
I was just thinking it must be hard for one if they've been in the movement for a number of years and then
it is hard. It is hard.
They haven't advanced as much as they'd like to.
Of course, it is hard. But at the same time is recognizing it is part is the problem.
Yes.
Just like this. The child is out in the snow. They've taken off at least 3/4 of what their mom put onto them. And, you know, like that. And they're running around and they're sneezing and this and that. Their fingers are blue. Their teeth are chattering. Now, can you do anything about it if they don't recognize it? Come in, you're cold, you're getting sick. No, I'm having fun. Everything's great. You know? Does that make sense? Or you have the big, you know, burly guy, the man's man, you know, like that, you know, and he gets sick, you know, is he sick? No, he can never be sick, because, you know, like that. So until you identify the problem, you can't deal with it. So that's the whole point. That's why humility is important, because then you can identify it so you can deal with it. Does that make sense? But that means then everybody's got to be honest. You know? So like that. So... But because you can't make everybody honest, you can only make yourself honest. That's the whole point. So then you can appreciate where the strengths are and you don't worry about the weaknesses. Because the point is that's why it's a society. Everybody has their strengths, and if you put them all together, it's a complete package. So therefore, you have examples. Someone says, "Oh, but there's no good example." There's unlimited good example. You just have to know how to see good example. If one says there's no good example, means one doesn't know what good is. But otherwise, you see, somebody's, you know, every aspect of what was recommended in Krishna consciousness, somebody's doing it properly. So you can take inspiration from there. You understand? So we have to be able to get by the thing that it has to be one person's doing everything perfectly. And then only I can surrender. That's the difficulty. Right? So, yes. How does I caught the last about Stana and Poshana. What was the beginning?
Why is the seventh canto called Science of God?
Why is the seventh canto called Science of God?
How it connects to the previous
book. Science of God, now you're seeing about what is the position of God, the relationship with the devotee and everything like that, because now you're going to see how God deals with his devotee. Before we've seen, it's been more about the devotees and all that. And their different relationships and all that. So Krishna comes into it, it's about it. But here we're going to see Krishna himself and how he personally deals. Okay. I don't think I've seen that before. I've seen one, but not... Yeah, motorcade. Yeah. Yeah. At first I thought they were connected. But then, He's protecting. He's taking care. But the whole point is he's taking care because of how they're dealing with him. Here we see him personally as Bhagavan. You could basically say before this, most all the incarnations, you were dealing with Paramatma. You might be dealing with Bhagavan, but you're bringing out the position, relationship. But now we're going to be dealing with Bhagavan. And here we're also, as you see, this is where all the Paravastas start coming up, right? It's the first canto, then you see Krishna. But as we get into the actual Bhagavatam, I mean not the actual means, the Bhagavatam as spoken by Sukadev, then he's starting basically with the Brahman and Paramatma platform and then building it up, you know. And then you get into Vishnu, now you're getting into Paravasta. Yeah?
Does that mean we're dealing increasingly with the Lord's teacher?
Yes, you're seeing more as his desire. That's why we're making this distinction. Why we're saying about the principle, if it's Krishna's desire rather than ours. Because if we're just taking our desire and engaging in Krishna's service, then yes, it deals with the aspect of Krishna that he's the supreme, therefore we should surrender to him. But then what feature is that of Krishna? That's Paramatma. He's God. You know, so we put ourselves in the position of Icha, and we put the Lord in the position of Kriya Jnana. So that's why it's not so balanced. It has an effect. I mean, if the demons thinking about Krishna are going to get benefit, why wouldn't we get benefit by connecting it to Krishna, though it's not ideal? So, Krishna as Icha Shakti means we're dealing with him as Bhagavan. So Bhagavan means he's a person, means he has what he likes. It's just like, okay, let's say for the kid. Okay? And we're defining here, Icha means by what they're feeling that they would want. Right? So with Krishna that's going to be perfect, therefore there's a lack of perfection in this example. Okay? Now, it is a particular time, you know, occasion for a child, a small child, to get gifts. Okay? Now, you know, a variety of gifts will be there. Right? Parents might give things, you know, that they know what they want. What do the aunties and grandmas give the kid? Yeah, socks, you know, itchy scarves, you know, stuff like that. So their giving is good for the kid. This is where the weakness goes. But it's about their own position. They're in the position to take care, so therefore they give according to that. So it starts with themselves, then it's applied on the child. How much does the child appreciate it? Not so much. So because it's not really about them. It may have a connection with the relationship, but it's not. It's more one-sided. It's a concern for them, but it's a concern for how the others want to take care, so they don't really have a say in it. It's not so personal. So what we're saying here is that the Lord has His ways of doing things. That's how we see from the past times. That's how they do things. You know what I'm saying? The Acharyas have accepted, the Acharyas talk in this way. Whether the modern intellectuals accept that or not, we really couldn't care less. And their standing and authority in this is zero would be a euphemism. You know, it'd be better, you know, zero to, you know, the tenth, you know, like that. That would be more like it. You know, so the whole point is they have no authority. So, but that means then you have to accept authority, you have to accept conclusion, because if there's Krishna's Icha, there is conclusion. If it's your own Icha, you set your own conclusion. Right? And if you sit around with crocodile grins, you know, not saying your philosophy too strong so no one else does, and they all laugh about how it's nice and intellectual and all that, then everybody's happy. Right? But in reality, the point is Krishna does things, that's the way he likes it. You know? And yes, that's the way he likes it. And so, that's then what's given to us in a, you know, as practical a way as possible.
Systematized.
Yes, systematized. So, because we're stuck on the secondary, naturally, we need systems to function. Right? I mean, someone who's spontaneous in an area doesn't need a system because they know what to do with it. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like the difference, let's say, cumin. Okay, you can put it into the chaunce as a whole seed. You can grind it into a powder and put it into the chaunce. You can grind it into a paste and put it into the chaunce. You can grind it into powder or paste, either one, and put them raw into when the vegetable is boiling. You can dry roast the cumin and put it in at the end. You know, it's a garnish. You understand? So, and then how much you roast it, how much volume you put, just in this one thing, and where you put it, you basically have so many varieties. That's one spice. Now you have chili, you know, now you have ginger, you have, you know, all these other spices that you can use. So where you can put them and this and that, you know, is that a sense? Like here's something, not salt. You throw it into the chaunce, you get a totally different flavor. It does the salt effect, but it also gives a flavor, an effect. So there's all kinds of things you can do. Throw the sugar into there, it caramelizes, you get color, you get another flavor. So, therefore, the elements of cooking, you have six places where you can add spices and all that. You have the variety of things that you're steaming, you're boiling, you're baking, you're frying, you're shallow frying, you're like these things, you're roasting, all these different things are there. Then all the different spices that are there, how you can do it, all the different vegetables, all the kinds of preparations you can make, dry things, wet things, rich things. It's unlimited. Literally unlimited. So you know this, you need a recipe book. You don't need anything. Right? But it may be that out of all these unlimited, there was a few that are really outstanding, so these are noted down. But how are they noted? Not by volumes and times and temperatures. It just says these things go in this kind of order, you know, in these places, so you get this effect. That's all. So a whole recipe is written in a few sentences. Right? But now if you don't understand this principle, you need a recipe. And you need to be taught how to follow a recipe. But the idea in following the recipe, at some point, you're going to get an understanding of the whole thing, what cooking is, rather than what following a recipe is. Then you'll be able to combine all these things. Does that make sense? You know, like that, you can turn things around. You can do all. You can do amazing things. Does that make sense? So that's the idea: is that the structure is made into place. So there's a system. There's a mission that has a structure. You know. So nowadays, institution has a bad name. At the same time as bureaucracy has a great name. Work that out. It doesn't make any sense. So therefore, you're taking a system in which these are the recommended processes that you follow for Krishna, because you're doing them because the acharyas say, and it's open for pleasing Krishna. Therefore, you get benefit, you advance. Now, when you become more mature, it should be you understand, and now you can put them together in combinations that are even better, match more and more situations. So that's development. Right? But if we throw that out and then revert to our own system, then where's the actual connection to Krishna, other than the element of consciousness? So in other words, the primary we're connecting, but the secondary actually we're not connecting. Or its motive is ourselves, and then ultimately gets to Krishna. But who says that it's the same? You know, on whose authority is it the same? Yeah. The whole point is it may be a secondary aspect of, let's say, Mother Yashoda cooking for Krishna, but it's a secondary aspect that's always used. You know what I'm saying? Let's say there's the rule. Nectar Devotion mentions that you perform the activity for Krishna in meditation, it gets the same benefit. So what if Mother Yashoda just sat in her bedroom and meditated on all the nice things she was cooking for Krishna and all the different things she was doing and this and that? Yeah. So you don't have the facility, yes, you do that. Like that Brahmin did not have the facility. So he's organizing this huge tree, much more than what he can do, and his absorption is great. But if he has it, he'll use it. Right? Sudama Brahmin has nothing, so he engages what he has in Krishna service. He has more than Indra, he engages that in Krishna service. So that's the principle. So we take that and then say, oh no, but we don't have to cook for Krishna, we only have to do it in meditation. Then the point is then why did Prabhupada show all these things? Why are the resident spiritual world so concerned about these things? So who are we to say it doesn't matter? You know what I'm saying? It's not like, okay, you're out in the bus traveling in this thing and God only knows what you could get at the funny little place on the side of the road in the petrol station that wasn't even properly stocked. So you have that, so you make an offering, but along with that offering you offer all kinds of nice stuff. You know, so then, yes, you would use that there. But it wouldn't be that you would go back to the temple where you have all facilities and then you do a mental offering and then not actually make the endeavor. That wouldn't be right. So this whole point of throwing out the secondary aspects that are recommended by the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that's not intelligent. You have to know why they're doing it. Right? So there's a reason why they're doing it. And so that's so that we get used to doing things for Krishna. Right now we're doing because it's the rules, it's the regulations, so therefore it's Vaidhi. But after a while we do it because that's the way Krishna likes it. Krishna likes to get up at, you know, 4 in the morning. Right? Because if you don't get... Let's say Krishna and Radharani sleep until it's just about light. Then, but the point is they have to be back in their places. So that means they would have to get up and immediately run off. Right? So, since Krishna and Radharani aren't into that, you know, one-night stand kind of thing, you know, where you just sneak off without telling the other person kind of jest, they like to get up earlier. So they can spend some time together, spend some time with their associates and everything like that, then go back, then have their bath and everything. That's how they like it. You know what I'm saying? So it's personal. It's about him. So we go to that because then it's because that's the way Krishna likes. And after a while, we're comfortable with that. And we can work in that spontaneously. But if we're just going to work on our own thing, that's not going to be strong. It's not ideal. Does that make sense? Okay. Someone else has something? Yes. Yes. That's why the Vedic system is one of the few that can maintain individuality but follow a system. You know, it's just like this. Let us say in the West, each social strata has their own methods in that. They don't overlap really much. But in the Vedic system, the poorest man and the rich man have commonality because of the culture. He's too much of an individual. Okay. He's too much of an individual. But what does that mean? No, I'm saying, what does that mean? Because I'm an individual, okay. So what has that got to do with anything? So every soul is individual, every soul is different. So why is that so special? You're an individual, but what does that mean, individual?
I have my own world.
You have your own world, okay. And where did this own world come from? Before you were born, they handed you this, you know, 25-page document and told you to check off all the boxes. And therefore, then, you know, you got exactly what you wanted. And so now your world was created by you. Means your endeavor, your desires, you got what you got. But who's in control of your world? Yeah, yeah. And so the whole point is so therefore this world has laws. And we're not the lawmaker. So having individuality that you like to perform activities within it, but it's still about Krishna. Mother Jashoda is individual, therefore she cooks for Krishna. The cowherd boys, do we ever hear about him cooking for Krishna? I don't think there's one pastime where we hear about them cooking for Krishna.
Giving a flower instead of seed.
Sorry?
Giving a flower instead of seed.
That's not, yes, but that's not cooking. Eating together, this, that. Mother just showed, do you ever hear him sitting down and eating with Krishna? No. You understand? She may feed Krishna. She doesn't. So everybody has their areas. But within that, she's an individual, so she's trying to find different things to do nicely for Krishna. But Krishna is still the primary aspect. But when we say, I'm so individual, it's about ourselves. See, the Vedic system is the only thing that can accommodate individuality. The modern actually doesn't. Right? It doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. Like, now they don't bother me so much, but for 30 years, Everything might be go by, be standing in the temple, and someone would be standing next to me, some, you know, very concerned God brother, like that. They always kind of lean over to me and kind of like, you know, psst, you know, your cloth is touching the ground. Like, you know, that's the end of the world. You know? The same time is that, okay, we wear shorter stuff. Then it's kind of like, oh, you're in the temple, you can't, it doesn't look, you can't wear... Doesn't matter unless you're wearing exactly what they're wearing, the same shoes that they're wearing it the same way, then it's weird. Where does that come from? That comes from the West. You know, look at any of the paintings of Lord Chaitanya. You got there with guys with shaved heads, guys with long hair and beards, you know, guys there with hardly any clothes on, guys there, you know, really dressed to the max, guys with jewelry, guys with nothing. It all fits in the Vedic thing. This whole thing is that the Vedic is narrow and the modern is wide. No, the modern is the most narrow. It's just that if you're in your group, you think it's unlimited. But anybody outside your group doesn't do what you do. You understand? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. I mentioned that one political cartoon. There was two hippie parents, right? They're sitting there, you know, the long hair, that, and the background's, you know, the big guru thing with the beard and all that, and the incense is billowing and all that. And then just at that time, their kid walks in. You know, he's got the shiny little shoes and the ankle socks and the shorts down to the knee, you know, and the blazer and the tie and his hair nicely combed and shorts and everything, you know, really pucker, like something out of some kind of, you know, junior preppy school like that. And they turn to each other and say, "Where did we go wrong?"
There's another version of that where instead of two hippies, it's two punks in the 70s. 20 years later,
they're
still with
the logos
and this and that, and
their child is well behaved, well groomed. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like I say, it's the same thing. So, no matter what it is, everybody doesn't like it. You understand? That's the thing, is you can't accommodate. Sorry? Yeah. You know, it's just, and where is this refined? Where is the, what do you call it? We call that, you know, the thing where the pot, you know, that metal pot that's on the fire that's melting the metal?
Cauldron.
The cauldron, right? Where's the cauldron of this Western culture being brought to its perfection of you know,
melting.
That melting pot, but it's that kind of thing, right? High school, right? And if you don't do exactly what you're doing, they get you. You know what I'm saying? Huh? Yeah, so that's the whole point. So... Where is this broad-mindedness and this? All it is that it's different from what they're doing it. That's why they're attacking the Vedas. So it's a lack of accommodation that they're attacking the Vedas. Right? But otherwise, individuality, that works very nicely. Because individuality, you have to fit within a context. Yeah, they're saying, I'm an individual. So are they wearing a sarong? You know, are they showing up in a Japanese martial art outfit? No, they're wearing exactly what fits into their little group. You know what I'm saying? You know, that they're wearing the tight skinny jeans, you know, because everybody else is wearing them. You know, if they showed up in, you know, big baggy bell bottoms, what would happen? They'd be harassed. You understand? So this whole thing, I'm so individual, is nonsense. All it is I don't accept authority. That's the real point. My ego is big, my attachments are great, I don't accept authority. That's the whole point.
I accept my authority, or I...
No, I accept my mind as an authority, but I don't accept anyone else's authority. So the point is only the Vedic system can accommodate that. What did Prabhupada have with him? Right? Prabhupada's sitting there, and I forget who it is, flat. But it's one of these lofts. So those lofts are huge. They'll be at least as big as this, if not bigger, right? Because they're a big building. They'll probably even be bigger, way bigger than this. But artists get them for cheap, you know, like that, because they're, you know, or they can just, they kind of give them to you, them to use. I think many of them held on to them. And now they're worth, you know, millions. Like that. So they had this huge thing. They put up a few, you know, some ropes and a few blankets or sheets and that, you know, and then Prabhupada's on one side and they're all on the other side doing that. So I think it was, I'm not sure if it was Mukunda or one of the a little bit more mature from the Lower East Side came to visit. And different people are sitting around in meditation, doing all kinds of things like that. So they're coming, oh, it's kind of yoga, it's kind of this and that. They get in and see Prabhupada and say, you know, hey, so you do meditate, you do yoga, and says, and Prabhupada basically says, I don't know what those guys are doing. What we do is this. you understand? So that's the point. Prabhupada's accommodating whatever insanity is there. As long as they're engaged in Krishna service, it's good. But if they start to, you know, say that, no, what I'm doing, this is Krishna conscious, we don't have to follow the other things that Prabhupada's saying, then would Prabhupada support that? No. But if it's you're just taking your individuality, connecting to Krishna, that's fine. But with purification, it will develop. Like the devotee, when I chant, what is it, I see a blue light or something like that. Prabhupada, don't worry, keep chanting, it'll go away. They were thinking, oh, wow, this is, you know, some realization. But no, it was just, yeah, it'll go away.
I've heard that in the society, wherever people want to show up, and everyone be thinking that he's our friend.
Yes, that's the whole point, because he gets the essence. No matter who he talked to, they all thought he was a gentleman. So that's the whole point, is he can accommodate. The Vedic system can accommodate. These other systems can't accommodate. Some are more broad, some are less. Like the... how you say, the American model can handle a lot of variety, but those varieties can't bump into each other. You know what I'm saying? Because it's so big. If, you know, if America had to fit into, let's say, you know, Vermont or something, you know, then there'd be a problem. There'd be so much less variety. You know what I'm saying? Because the southerners are down south, and northerners are up north, and the west coast is out west coast. They never bump into each other, so there's no problem. But if any of those three bump into each other, none of them are going to like each other. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like that. They just won't like each other. That's the whole point. Everybody can work because there's an etiquette and all that, and it all works very, very smoothly. All the aspects of society can be together. Now, if someone gets false ego, problem comes up. You know? So that's the whole thing. The Vedic culture starts with humility. Humility is the symptom of knowledge. Is that okay? Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And if the gay people walk into certain neighborhoods in the South?
I don't know about the
countries. Yes, but the other countries, but how much variety? Does the other countries have guys riding around on motorcycles that they made kind of weird and have funny Fu Manchu mustaches?
Yeah.
And go around and stuff and kick everybody around, and you know what I'm saying? In other words, the variety that's there is not as wide. And the whole point is okay, take your country. Where? How close is your closest neighbor? Half a kilometer, if you're too close to the city. You go a little farther out, they're 1 kilometer away. Pucka. I remember, I always thought it was very amusing. One devotee, was some devotees who were visiting some devotees there. They were driving, they lived out in the country. They were driving into the big bad city, right? Of Stockholm. And as they're driving in, I think at that point it's a 6-lane highway. 3 and 3. And on the road, he could see a total of 6 cars. On his side of the road and the other side. He's freaking out. Oh no, I hate this traffic. I hate this thing. So that's why we live out in the country. LA has 12-lane highways, and they're actually, it's a parking lot. Literally. You know, they say, M25 is the biggest parking lot in the world. They've never seen LA. M25, 6 lanes. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is there will be, but it won't be till as extreme because there's not as much. Therefore, the differences will be quite more. While in here, they'll have more of the flavor of that country, but, you know, a little bit. You understand? At the same time, where did those choppers come from? They came from America. You know, the punks, the this, that, they all came out of England or America. You know what I'm saying? So in their own area, they're accommodating. You know, it's just like we were riding our bikes, the Hotramars and myself, in Amsterdam. But in Amsterdam, they're really liberal on, you know, you can go, you know, you can say marijuana, this, that, you know, like you said, you know, anything goes. You know, I would say you're probably your maximum application of the 56 gender identifications given in Facebook are all well represented there. Right? But when we were driving around on the bikes, then sometimes we would get all kinds of comments. So as long as it's within their narrow liberal kind of thing like that, anything outside of that, they can't accommodate. You know? You understand? You're in Amsterdam, let's say that you're being not so straightforward, you know, or a little emotional. Are they going to like it? No. You understand? They're just straightforward in your face, and if you're not like that, they don't like it. It does. It's like this. Have you ever been in Calcutta or on the train or in Delhi, and you have these girls come up to you that you're not quite too sure if they're girls? Huh? A big for girls, a little too square gin for girls, sometimes a little bit of a, you know, 5 o'clock shadow, you know? A little too bold for girls. Huh? Yeah. They're just part of the scene. You know, it's a standard thing. Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada, when he was telling, it mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, more in the Bhagavat, I think, but when he was talking about a devotee wanted to do a drama, and Lord Chaitanya, so Prabhupada was telling him, here's how the drama should go. And when Lord Chaitanya appears and all that, he talked about hijras should come and dance. Because they come, when they hear a child's born, they come and dance and this, they give blessings, and then you give them a nice dakshin. And if you don't, they will make your life miserable. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what I'm saying? It's only now the West with the thing, you know, they have their pride, they walk down the street, you know, but is it cool? Now, okay, you have the gay pride walking down the street. Could you have a, you know, straight pride walking down the street? How would that hit the newspapers? How would that hit the magazines? Straight pride, you know? Right, all the rednecks out there, you know, walking down there, got their girls, you know, how would it go down? And this is our so-called liberal society. So all it is they pick and choose at which point they're tolerant of what. What is the point? You know what I'm saying? What's the point here? This is not a social discussion. You understand? What we're trying to understand is the principle here. We gave the example of Prabhupada. Now, if others follow his example or not, that's up to the individual. So it's not about, we're not talking about the state of ISKCON and the individuals and who's developed and who's not and this and that. Does that make sense? But generally, I've seen as those who do accept the Vedic cultural thing, are able to work with it, understand philosophy, practice, culture themselves. They're the ones that can work with the widest range of people outside of the culture. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Non-Jewish system and non-Jewish system, and all based on bias, right?
It's all based on lies because it's that you're not accepting that the soul is the actual person. So the basis of everything, and that's why it says everything in the world is illusion. It's not that it's not actually factually there, but the concept of its value and its importance is illusory. It does. It does. It means faith is there, but if you don't have faith, then it's only by chanting in that you'll gain faith. So that's the inherent thing, because they've been in an environment where there is nothing stable or steady than there tends to be. Just like that. Instructing Krishna consciousness to little kids actually isn't a problem. It's adults that are a problem. You know, generally adults think that they're the mature ones, they can only understand it. Kids are so much easier. Way easier. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, for kids, if you got guys that can fly in the air and there's Rakshasas and Arjuna with his bow and arrows, they don't have any problem with it at all. You know what I'm saying? Adults have problem with that. It takes faith, but everything takes faith. Like that, doing anything takes faith. It's just a matter of where you're willing to apply your faith. See, the idea is the Western is I'm in control. Though, we're not in control. You know what I'm saying? We're not in control. But there's the concept that we're in control. They want you to feel you're in control. It's just like this. You see a particular advertisement 7 times. It sticks in your mind. Right? So, therefore, if the you know, advertisers have put up these things 7 times in places where they know where people move and this and that, so that they'll come across these, then are you actually in control? No. But because you basically will decide to look into it, and there's a good chance you will buy it, right? So you're not in control, but because you yourself thought, hey, that looks interesting, therefore you think you're in control. So in reality, who's in control? The modes of nature in control. And there's laws of these modes, so therefore things work in that way. But there's the illusion that we're in control. Does that make sense? Yes.
I was just wondering if we still have desires and we're going to engage them in Krishna's consciousness, can we say that we're genuinely an instrument? Can we still say that?
What would be the non-instrumental element?
Well, I was thinking when we're
pure. Yeah, but that's why we make the distinction of pure. Right? Because karma yoga means you're engaging your nature. It may be on the platform of pure, it may be on the platform of mixed. But the point is you're engaging what you have.
Yeah, but you could still call that being an instrument.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you're stirring the sabji in the pot. So that particular instrument that you use is still the instrument, even though it can only stir things in a pot. It can't grate the carrots, or, you know, it can't blend the tomatoes. So just because it only does that doesn't mean it's not an instrument.
Yeah.
Okay?
Well, it doesn't matter what you use to stir.
You can. It's still an instrument.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately we're only working, you know, with the modes of nature. So that means you can only use what matches that mode. Right? If the modes are such, this is what's happening, you can only have something that works like that. Right? You know, the kids out in the middle of the street playing, they don't see the cars coming, right? Then you have the 90-year-old grandmother there with the walker. Is that going to work? No. You understand? So the point is that it's engaged. You see what's there. Now, she can point to someone else, call someone else over and say, get that kid. You understand? So that's how they're the instrument. You know, while the, you know, somebody younger and more strong, they can go out and catch the kid. So everyone's engaging the nature according to, but the whole point is this, everything ultimately is an instrument. Because we're saying I'm the doer, but we're not. We're still an instrument. But it's just a matter of, are we an instrument for, if we're an instrument because we're of duty, then that's pious. If we're an instrument because it pleases Krishna, then that's actually the proper position. Right? You know. Some sense. And who is we?
What?
Who is we?
No, I mean I.
That's what I mean. They saying I'm the controller because I can pick up the pen. And who's picking up the pen? You're 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair. The pen's millions of times bigger than you. I mean, probably billions of times bigger than you. You're going to tell me you're picking up the pen? The whole point is that you're not doing it anyway. It's still the modes of nature. You have the idea. The idea pushes on the wind. The wind pushes on the fire. The fire pushes on the muscle. And then the pen gets picked up. Now, who allowed that process? Paramatma understands what you want. He sanctions it. Then Maya then moves the modes, which moves all that kind of stuff. She's in control of the 24 elements, not us. Yeah, so it's, that's the whole thing. Or you're asleep, pick up the pen.
It's very important to have that schema in pocket.
Huh?
It is very important to have that schema in pocket. So to remember, use the
controller. Yes. Okay, so break here. We end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityāgaura Prema Nandini.